The views and opinions expressed by guests on Soda City Unleashed are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of CVETS. While we love sharing stories and insights from the veterinary world, this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitution for professional veterinary advice, diagnosis, or treatment. We always recommend consulting your primary veterinarian for any medical concerns regarding your pet. Welcome to Soda City Unleashed, where we decode pet health with some of the best vets in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm your host, Emily White, and today, Dr. Elizabeth Gregory of Veterinary Criticalist is joining us. Dr. Gregory, welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a veterinary criticalist. Like you said, I'm from the upstate of South Carolina and went to school at Clemson. Go Tigers. And I went to vet school at Mississippi State and then did my internship at the Animal Medical Center in New York City for a year. And then I did my residency at Michigan State. So went from one MSU to another.
Wow, you've traveled all over.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. But I'm very happy to be back home.
Did you move back to South Carolina to be closer to family?
I did. Pretty much all my family is either in the upstate or in Charleston. So it's been very nice being back home and being with my nieces and nephews. So.
That's awesome. Now, I believe Dr. Wolf also did his at the animal in New York City.
He did.
What was that like?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a big place. It's a very busy place. My year was also when COVID started.
Of course.
And so that was a bit of a rough ride in the middle of your internship year. It was very fun for a year. Like, I enjoyed being in the city, and it's a busy place, but you get exposed to a whole lot.
Absolutely. Gosh, New York. And to go from Clemson, God's country, out to Mississippi, and then New York.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a change.
What made you choose Michigan?
They are just known for having a very good critical care program, and they were one of my top choices.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'd never been to Michigan before I went there, but you got to experience the cold. So a little bit different. Big change.
A residency's 3 years? Okay. The cold for 3 years.
Yeah.
No wonder you came back.
I know. There was a lot of snow. A lot of snow. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's awesome. Cool. Okay. Well, all right. Let's get started with some health stuff. What are your top three pieces of advice for pet owners?
So I think a big one is just knowing like what constitutes a significant emergency. You know, like, when do you need to go to an ER? Things like collapse, weakness, you know, you should rush them in right away. If they're unable to go to the bathroom, if they eat something they shouldn't, you know, things like that. Trouble breathing, for sure. Two, I think kind of going along with that is knowing what's toxic to pets. Mm. You know, Tylenol, we try to avoid that at all costs, especially in cats.
I didn't know that.
And even just normal, you know, pain medications that you and I would take, like ibuprofen, Advil, things like that, can all be very toxic. Garlic, onions, you know, things that you don't necessarily think about, but any human medication can be very toxic.
Interesting. I know there's things that always come to mind for me, chocolate, grapes. Yeah. But there's also those other things that people don't necessarily think about.
I feel like, you know, grapes and raisins and things are things that people are knowing more, you know, more recently. Yes, there are all sorts of things that we try to avoid.
Gosh. But. And what's your third piece of advice?
Third, I think, is investing in pet insurance. It makes such a difference, especially on my side of things. Mm. Things do get quite expensive the longer they're in the hospital. Pet insurance can absolutely be life-changing. And can save an animal's life.
Absolutely. Because you guys are seeing emergencies.
Yeah. I mean, we have, you know, the sickest patients in the hospital, and sometimes they're there for a week or longer. And that does add up pretty quickly. And I have absolutely seen pet insurance save lives. You know, owners can do a lot of things that they couldn't otherwise if they didn't have the insurance. So getting that insurance as soon as you adopt a new puppy or kitten really can make all the difference.
A huge difference. So backing up a little bit, for those who don't know, what exactly is critical care and how does that differ from emergency vet medicine?
So most emergency doctors are people who either came straight out of school or did a one-year internship. You know, they're very good at kind of triaging things, getting them stabilized, getting them to where they need to go. For critical care, we do an internship, but then we also do a three-year residency and take a very difficult boards exam where we get board certified in emergency and critical care. So we are trained on basically how to keep the sickest of the sick alive. So we're the ones who, if something is actively dying, we're the ones who are there. Even things who are not doing well under anesthesia, and if our anesthesiologist isn't there, is unavailable, we help with that. We deal with pretty much any case that might go to a different service. If they get sick enough or are critical enough, we get involved.
Absolutely. And then I know at our hospital at CVETS, we have like the oxygen chambers and whatnot. So you're dealing with anything that might need to be in one of those too.
Yep. So we deal with a lot of patients who need oxygen, or if they need more intensive oxygen support, like high flow nasal oxygen. Eventually, the goal is for us to have a mechanical ventilator as well to help patients who need that more intensive support. Yes.
Gotcha. So what would you say are some of the more common emergencies that land pets in critical care?
Probably one of the most common things would be bad trauma. So like being hit by a car, falling from a balcony, things like that, that we do see probably most common. Severe trouble breathing, whether that be from bad pneumonia or heart failure or kind of bruised lungs from being hit by a car. Post-operative, so like post-surgery. So a lot of cases who either didn't do well under anesthesia or they need a blood transfusion, after surgery, or if they were really sick before surgery, then they'll come back to me as well for kind of continued care. Pretty much anything that is sick comes to me.
Is it common to have a criticalist in an animal hospital like this?
There are not a ton of us. Like, we are a growing specialty, but we are fairly small still. So it's becoming more and more common to have a criticalist just to help try to elevate that level of care and take care of the really sick things. So it is becoming more common.
Interesting. Did you... were there a lot of classmates of yours in school?
No, I was the only one.
Really?
Yeah. No, it's not a very popular field just because of the stress and the lifestyle.
Intensity of it.
Yeah. And a lot of people ended up wanting to do emergency, or you can do an internship or go straight out of school and not do a residency. Because residencies, it's a lot, and it's more time of not getting paid very well either. So a lot of people want to go straight out and work. There were not very many of us at all. And even in my internship, there were only, I think, two of us ended up going into critical care.
Was there a particular reason why you wanted to go into critical care?
I actually went into vet school thinking that I wanted to do large animal. I actually really loved dairy and thought I wanted to do dairy only. And then it was probably like my second or third year of vet school, and we were starting to get into clinics, and I realized that I gravitated towards all the really sick animals and the dying animals who none of my other classmates wanted. So figured out pretty quick that was what I like to do.
Something you're interested
in.
Thinking back on your career so far, and even through your internship and residency, can you describe one of the more intense or like high stakes cases you've been involved with?
There's so many. I think probably Tucker is one that we all think about, and think everyone at CVETS knows Tucker by now. But he was a young boykin, still a puppy, who ate a sock, and the morning I took him over, he died. Like, his heart stopped. He was not breathing. We did CPR and got him back, but he still had a foreign body. And so we ended up taking him to surgery just a few hours later. And the fact that he survived that was a huge deal. And he's now almost back to being a very normal dog, and he lives a pretty normal life. And that's pretty cool. Right? There aren't a lot of cases that you get that level of success. So
absolutely.
He's one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah. And he, because even just, okay, one, bringing a dog back to life, and then two, rolling him into the OR, were you just standing outside of the OR like,
Oh, I was in there the whole time.
Really?
Yeah. So it was me and Dr. Schick were in there. She was doing the surgery. I was helping run his anesthesia and trying to keep him alive. We were surprised that we got him through it. And then he just continued to improve. But yeah, that was a very high stakes anesthesia and trying to get him through surgery as fast as possible. And Dr. Schick did a great job, and we were in and out of there as fast as we possibly could. But.
And because his heart, stopped, he stopped breathing. So he had some neurological issues and stayed with you guys for quite a bit.
For a long time. Yeah. So he had a pretty significant brain injury from basically hypoxia, right? His brain did not receive enough oxygen for that time that he was, dead, basically. Right. The good news is that he was a young puppy, and puppies and kittens in particular are just so resilient. They can bounce back from a whole lot if we can give them enough time. So Tucker was very lucky that he had the owners that he does, and, they gave him a chance. And now he's living his best life and eating more socks. And so hopefully he doesn't have to come back again. But
that's just something with those boykins. Yeah. I swear, they're attracted to the socks.
They eat everything.
Well, would you say that that's one of your more rewarding cases?
For sure. Yeah. He's one that you look back and you're like, I did my job. And that was pretty cool. That is kind of the epitome of critical care, and that's what got most of us into doing it. We've all kind of had those cases where we are able to get them back from the brink of death or death itself.
Actual death.
And that is pretty cool. It's a good feeling.
Makes it all worth it.
Yeah, it does.
So like we said, you often are dealing with pets at their sickest and owners at their most emotional. Mm-hmm. How do you manage those conversations with compassion?
It's tough. It can be very tough. You do have to be a very empathetic person, and it does weigh on you. And like I said, we're dealing with people who are at their worst, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had people who tell me that losing their pet is worse than when they lost a parent. And it's very difficult to help try to navigate those situations for people. People don't understand too how much that weighs on vets who are dealing with that. Vets unfortunately do have a significantly higher suicide rate than the general population. And I think people realizing that we do everything that we can for their pets, right? We work really hard to try to keep their pets alive and to get them home. And some people aren't as, not necessarily appreciative, but aren't as kind sometimes when we're dealing in those situations. So always taking things that people say with a grain of salt in terms of if they're upset with us, right? They're upset with the situation. It's they're trying to deal with their pet who's dying.
Right. And as a family member to them.
Yeah. So it can be very hard. In general, I always wish that people would be nicer to their vets. we're not in it for the money. Right. We're not in it for the wrong reasons. I mean, there are always going to be a few bad eggs, right? But for the most part, we're here because we want to help pets, and we want to get them better. We want to get them home. And I wish more people would realize that.
Absolutely. And you say you have to be an empathetic person in order to talk to the owners. But you also, being empathetic means you have a lot of feelings, right? Yeah. And you're dealing with these pets too. So you have to be able to guard your own emotions, right?
And that's really hard. And I can tell you there are so many days where I have a hard time sleeping, right? So I'm just constantly worried about the patients who are in the hospital. It's like, could I be doing something more? Is there something else that I should do? Something else that we should try? It's very hard. It's very hard to separate yourself. And, it means I care, but at the same time, it is very, very difficult. It weighs on you.
Do you, this is off the cuff too. Do you practice any self-care to actively keep yourself?
I really like houseplants. When I moved here, I actually had a lot of houseplants. I have adopted 2 cats and currently have very few houseplants because one of them has decided no plants are allowed in the house. But also really like to read. Otherwise, I'm always looking for a new hobby. But
that's good. You have to be sure. I mean, your brain is on when you're at work, but when you're dealing with such. I'm no counselor, but when you're dealing with such heavy stuff, when you're home, you need to be able to unwind. Yeah. And
it's important to try to be able to just shut your brain off and relax.
Right.
Just, and it adds, easier said than done. But.
Right, right. And in human medicine, you know, someone can say, hey, that hurts. Like, hey, I'm in pain. In veterinary medicine, you know, our patients can't speak for themselves. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of it is guesswork and trying to make them the most comfortable. And so, reading minds is hard. So
it does.
When you get it home, you got to just chill out for yourself. Well, on another note, what would you say is the funniest thing that's happened to you?
So that's a tough one, and it might be more gross than funny.
Love it all.
Great. When I was in residency, we had this dog come in who looked like he had gotten into marijuana. Like, he acted, like, very classically like he had gotten into marijuana, only to come to find out that he had eaten his owner's vomit, who had eaten marijuana.
Oh. So he was high. Yeah. On marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was
vomit. Yeah.
So did you just treat the dog like he had eaten?
Yeah. Yeah. He did great.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
How did you guys end up coming to that conclusion? Did the owner fess up?
He told us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, you just gotta.
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, we were in Michigan. It was legal. So people were a little bit more willing to just be like, yes.
Right. Right. Instead of tiptoeing around it. He's like, oh, by the way, I also threw up on the ground
He ate it.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a little disgusting.
I mean, after the grossness, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Because he was pretty affected from it, too.
Really? Yeah. It must have been a very strong edible.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They're always so funny when they come in, when they've eaten. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's generally something that we give them fluids, right? And that we I do any of that.
I mean, half the time, honestly, we just send them home for monitoring. Sometimes they're bad enough where they actually need to stay in the hospital and, you know, get intralipid therapy and things just to try to draw out the toxin. I have seen dogs who were comatose for days from it. I've seen dogs who have to be on a ventilator.
Oh my goodness! From it, because they
get into so much. Wow. Not usually like the edibles and things like that. It was more like the wax and the butter. It's a lot more concentrated. Yes, they can actually be really sick from it.
Oh but, my goodness!
Yeah, on average, they do fine.
Right,
they just need some time and sleep it off.
What were the symptoms?
Yeah, so the classic things that you see when they come in, they are usually a little bit wobbly. So, like, people say they look drunk or ataxic. They have what's called hyperesthesia. So, like, if you go towards their face, they just flinch really dramatically. Mm-hmm. That's pretty characteristic. They often will be dribbling some urine. So, like, they'll just be like leaking a little bit of urine. Those are kind of the classic things.
Yeah.
And it's usually pretty easy to tell. Usually it's a that dog got into marijuana.
Excuse me, is there any marijuana around
here? Yeah. And I have, honestly, some of the funniest pictures in my camera roll besides the gross things are from dogs who are
just high.
Very high.
Just high.
Very high.
I think that's something that people don't realize is we don't care. Just tell us.
No. Even if dogs get into more serious substances, which does happen as well, we don't care. We're not going to tell the police. Like, we just want to help your dog.
We want to help the dog. So tell us quickly.
Yes.
Let
just
us
tell
get
us.
On
if you
it.
Tell us, the faster you tell us, the faster we can help your animal. And sometimes, like, if a dog gets into, you know, methamphetamine or cocaine, like, those dogs can actually die.
Right.
So the faster we know, the better.
Right. Just be honest.
Yeah. Again, we don't care. We're not tattling. We just want to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. The vomit. I'm going to think about that all day. Okay, so silly question, and I'm sure your team could answer this too, but you know you're a criticalist when ...
Probably when the building is burning down around you and everything is dying and you're just kind of in the middle of it, fairly happy, kind of in your zone.
It's a great day.
Yeah. So this is, I'm doing my job, and it's great.
That kind of does describe you, because I will come into the ICU and you're just smiling. You're like...
Yeah.
What do you want from me?
You
but also smiling.
You can't be stressed. Can't be stressed. Like, criticalists usually are kind of the calm ones, right?
You have to be.
Yeah. Like, we are in the middle of it all. And
if not you, who?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're trained to deal with all of the most significant emergencies or most serious emergencies. So, yeah, there's not much that stresses me out in terms of, like, being in the building. But
everything's burning down and you're just fine. You're literally the meme of that dog.
Yeah.
Sitting in the burning room.
It is always what I think about.
Everything's fine.
Yeah.
I will say if there's, like, something serious going on, like CPR or something, you're the one I'll be like, hey, what happened? And you'll just stop and tell me because, like, you got it under control. Yeah, Everything's fine. All the time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Is there anything else you want the world to know about critical care?
Oh, I don't know.
The answer could be no. That's okay.
I don't know. What is there?
Your pets are always in good hands, especially when they're at CVETS.
That is true. Yes.
Because we have you on staff.
I'm there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you give your pets an extra pet from us. And thank you for joining us for Soda City Unleashed.